Oh, by the way, during my research, I Googled Star Trek trivia, but I misspelled it, and instead I put in Star Trek Tevia, which I think is like a sugar substitute. Not the same. It was
Thought you
remarkably.
can get some like Fiddler on the Roof crossovers.
Yeah. Or Stevia. Stevia is the sugar thing. Tevia is the Fiddler on the Roof guy.
Klingon traditions. You want to marry a red shirt? No, Hava, no.
Right, you ready?
Yes.
Make it show.
Oh my gosh.
Welcome to
the Fantastic
Justice
Squad.
Super Bondo
Brother.
Friends.
We review stuff.
All right. Welcome everyone to our episode. This is Sancho Panda here with me as always, Secret Alias Man. What's your alias today?
Well, you know how sometimes, historically, male authors have adapted pen names of female authors and vice versa.
Yes.
In honorance, that's a word, of that tradition, I have adopted a female persona for this episode. So my alias today is Anne Droid.
Which fits because we're talking a whole lot about Star Trek today.
Da 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 da.
Should we stop there? The rest of the show is just going to be us doing the soundtracks.
Yes, we should stop before I tell you that my second choice for alias was Hal Odek.
I'm glad we dodged that bullet.
Yeah,
I'm glad
thank
we dodged
God.
that phaser blast.
We didn't go through that time travel, alternate timeline, reality. That would have been bad, Wesley. Thanks.
Well, we've made it to episode 10. You know what that means?
Yes, that means we get to contemplate our inadequacies while Bo Derek runs toward us in slow motion.
We're talking about Tommy Boy?
Sure.
Where's Bo Derek in the 10th Bond movie?
Didn't Miss Piggy also do that?
I don't know. She's definitely tried, I'm sure.
She's so competitive.
Yeah. I thought it would meant we were doing a Malcolm X movie.
Ah,
because of X is Roman
yeah,
numeral 10.
that's true. It also means we get to clone Picard and make a baby Bane.
We could all use more baby Bane.
That sounds like a breakfast cereal.
I need you to change my diaper.
I have made a poopy.
I grew up in the Daguerre system. I was molded by it.
I've always got my cup ready for Bane impersonations. It's just Sean Connery in a cup. That's all I do.
Oh my gosh.
So, since we're talking about Star Trek today, I did want to give a shout out to my friends over the Fly Casual podcast, although it's a Star Wars podcast. I figured I could squeeze it in since it starts with Star.
And J.J. Abrams.
Oh yeah, good point. There's enough lens flare to go around. So anyways, by far, Fly Casual is my favorite Star Wars podcast that I listen to. It's kind of like listening to sports radio, except they're talking about Star Wars instead of sports. It's just for loud, obnoxious guys interrupting each other and cutting up jokes as they cover news, toy reviews, rumors. They make up their own songs, which is where I got the idea to make up a song in our third episode, I think it was, second or third episode. And so you guys check them out, give them a listen. Fly Casual Podcast on iTunes and at betterkind.com.
And you turn me on to them, and I'm a fan.
Yay! And the really cool part is one of them has agreed to be on our show for whenever we're doing Star Warsy stuff. He's going to be our official Star Wars guru.
Ooh, which one? Is it the fly one or the casual one?
Well, there's four of them, so I think he's Pod. His name is Yerrick, not Jay Hardy. And he is also always retweets our podcast tweets, which is really cool. So he's super supportive of us, and we're really excited to get to have him on the show.
So when he was a young boy, did he tell everyone, I want to be a pod?
Instead of a pod racer, just a pod. And if you want to follow him on Twitter, he's at Kikuchiyo the 7th. Kikuchiyo, the number 7, TH. He's always tweeting out the terrible Hot Wheels toy line, Star Wars Hot Wheels toys. They're so bad.
Well, you can't stop the tweets, Mel.
Nope.
Speaking of Twitter, we need Twitter followers.
Yes, to validate our existence.
And since this is episode 10 and we're in double digits, I'm feeling ever so slightly megalomaniacal.
Legos. Mega hi, make a hiney ho.
Legos manai sickles.
Manamanamicals.
Many monocles is what I'm feeling.
We're fan bro friends. That's what you were trying to say, right?
Yes.
So follow us in spite of what just happened.
I just feel like this is the time to make our ultimatum. So if you don't follow us on Twitter at FanBroFriends right now, we're just not going to do the episode. It'll just be silence.
And oh, wait, we just got a follower. Phew.
All right, fine. We'll start.
So let's move on. What's next on the slate?
Well, I want to thank you for pronouncing Star Trek correctly.
Oh, what?
In the past, you haven't always.
I've said. Gotten, what have I said?
You haven't nailed necessarily every vowel.
Star Trek.
You're one of the Star Trek fans, apparently.
Yeah. I like all sports.
And I'm not sure why Trek has that particular failing, because the Star Wars fans don't have it. You don't hear people saying, I love Star Wars. Star Wars?
I don't know.
The Swedish chef is a huge Star Wars fan. So, thank you for pronouncing it correctly, because there are still those of us who care. I don't know still if it's politically correct to be a Trekkie or a Trekker.
See, I was just about to ask you that, because I wanted to let people know we are not Trekkers or Trekkies or Trekotomies.
I am Trekkier than you, though.
Yeah, as of today, after all the research you did for this episode.
No, I've always been Trekkier than you.
Oh, okay, well, you're going to have to prove it.
Well, for one thing, I was alive during the original broadcasts.
Oh, you always play that card.
Of being alive.
Like I had any control over that.
I win every argument by proving to you that I was alive. But it's true. The original was 66 to 69.
I'm still not convinced. I wasn't around to see that you were alive when I wasn't.
This is all a very cruel holodeck simulation.
Yeah.
But bringing it forward, I was a sophomore in college when the first episode of Next Gen aired.
Wow. That's crazy to think about.
How old were you?
10 years younger than that age.
So 9.
You were. 9. Yeah. I remember liking it, though, when it came out. And I'd already seen some of the old episodes, but...
Right.
Not a whole lot, yeah.
But still, your impression of it at 9 was, you know, significantly different than mine at 19.
Yeah, and my impression of Star Trek, the original series, when it first came out, was also very different from yours. Just because I was a really young kid and, you know, sci-fi borderlines on horror all the time.
So, yeah, I am Trekkier than you by virtue of two things. One, it was what existed when I was young. Star Wars did not.
Mm-hmm, right.
It was the only game in town, and it was a very, very cool game in town. And I obviously didn't realize at the time, but it's interesting that you say you were 9 when you saw Next Gen, because I was about that age watching the originals. And the originals ended up changing the world. It was the communication devices that a man who worked at Motorola, who loved the Star Trek series saw and said, we need something like that. And he invented the first cell phone.
Like, you mean a car phone or an actual cell phone?
The brick, that classic Michael Douglas. Yeah, the classic Michael Douglas brick cell phone and transporter technology, which, yeah, as we all know, was brought into reality by Willy Wonka. In 1971.
The glass elevator?
Yes. He used transporter technology for its intended use, which was to shrink annoying little boys.
And a giant candy bar, which when you think about it, like, that is not a good use of resources.
No. So here's the thing. As a kid, I always thought that they didn't use the transporter tech to the fullest that they could have, because that should have been this incredible medical miracle. Because... yeah. I mean, check my thinking on this. In order to transport you, they have to scan you, put that scan into the computer, take you apart to the atomic level, and then use that scan to put you back together at the atomic level where everything is just as it was, right? That's pretty much what is shown. So you could tell the transporter guy, hey, when you put me back together, could you take off like 5 pounds right around the abs? Just...
modern, the future of liposuction.
That transporter guy could have been so just filthy rich.
If you leave one of my chins behind, I won't be upset.
Yeah. So why was everyone on the original series so fantastically good looking? Now you know. And also in Wrath of Khan, when you beam me into the center of the Genesis planet, if you could take out that horrible death worm in my ear when you reassemble me. That would be awesome.
I should
awesome.
Have picked that up.
That would be great.
Good point.
And why they didn't use it as a weapon, you know, why they didn't just beam somebody into outer space or into a rock or into the person next to him. Ha ha, there we go.
I just archoned you.
Yeah. So I tell you what, if I designed the Enterprise along the lines of if I designed the Death Star, I would make a spa section of the Enterprise where you could go and you could work out at the He's Dead gym. So there you go. That's why I'm trekkier than you.
The cadet's logic is sound.
So since we've proven that I'm trekkier than you, I'm going to play a game with you called Ask Your Brother.
All right, cool.
So cue theme song.
Ask your brother. Ask your brother. Ask your brother stuff he doesn't know.
So my first ask your brother stuff he doesn't know question. How many tribbles have I seen?
Have you seen?
Yes.
I think nobody knows the tribbles you've seen.
Correct.
Yes, I got one.
You're doing very well. Question number
yes.
two. When the show, the original show, first aired on television, how many years in the future was the 5-year mission?
2000?
So close. Yes. Except for all of those numbers. The first episode aired in 66. The 5-year mission was from 2265 to 2270. So if you think that the first episode was written in 1965, it was exactly 300 years into the future.
Yes.
All right, you are 1-1.
Okay.
Question number 3. Did Captain Kirk ever say, beam me up, Scotty?
It sounds like a trick question, like it was always beam us up or something. But I'm going to say yes anyways.
That is incorrect. The closest he ever came was Scotty beam me up.
Wow.
You're 1-2. Question number 4. Was Lawrence Fishburne ever considered for the role of Geordi LaForge?
No, I just want to cast as many people as Geordi. How about the guy who played Cyclops? I think he'd make a great Geordi LaForge. And vice versa. Did I say vice versa okay?
Visa, visa. I believe is the original Hebrew.
Now I'm just hearing the pizza guy from Little Caesars.
Who was Hebrew, as I
said. I hope he was. I'm going to say yes, because I hope he was.
No. However, considered for the role of Geordi LaForge was Wesley Snipes.
Wow.
Oh,
I just want to see Wesley Snipes doing Reading Rainbow.
Always bet on blind.
Don't take my word for it.
You are 1-3. You need a comeback. All right, last question. How many times did Picard violate the Prime Directive?
Oh, Picard. Not as many as Kirk.
No one.
Even though he had more seasons.
No one could violate it as much as Kirk.
I don't know. I thought he stuck to his guns pretty well with the Prime Directive. I'm going to say 2.
Oh, you are so wrong.
Really?
Even by episode 21 of season 4, he had already broken it 9 times.
Wow.
Insert Ferris Bueller Principal Mooney voice.
9 times.
9 times.
9 times.
Oh.
There was an episode called The Drumhead, and Admiral Satie told Picard he had violated it 9 times since taking command of the Enterprise, and that was only in season 4.
And that's only the ones he knew of.
That went in the report. So, congratulations, you faced that with all of the courage of Scotty in the water tubes, and I salute you for it.
And you flushed me out.
So I've watched so much Star Trek this week, and I've really had a ball introducing my wife to some of the premiere episodes from my memory and my memory of their importance, and from all aspects, from the writing aspect, from the adventure aspect. So what I want to do is run down my top 5 of each of the series, of the original and the next gen, and then the movies that are the Kirk and Spock films. So
no Deep Space Nine, no Voyager, no Enterprise, no Star Trek Atlantis?
No, none of those.
No Star Trek SVU? I don't know.
Star Trek CSI? Star Trek Vegas?
All right, so we'll stick to the universally good ones.
So here are my top 5 original Kirk and Spock TV episodes.
All right.
Number 1 in my mind, and I'm not doing the thing where I build up to the best one, I'm doing the thing where I start with the best one.
Okay.
So the actual number 1 is Let That Be Your Last Battlefield, which starred Frank Gorshin, who was the Riddler in the Batman show.
Uh-huh.
And if you've not seen this episode, it is the episode where the Enterprise encounters a race of aliens that is split down the middle, half black, half white, a la Harvey Dent.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So you do know this one.
I remember the makeup.
So one species of this race is black on the right and white on the left. And the other species is reversed.
Oh, and therein lies the racism?
And therein lies the racism. And they've been locked in a thousands of years battle where those who are black on the right side have enslaved those who are black on the left side.
Hmm.
And
it's because I'm black on the left side, isn't it?
Yes. Always bet on black on the left side. And there is a fantastic scene where Frank Gorshin, who is the racist, is trying to convince Kirk and Spock of his position. And he says, well, look at me. Obviously, you can tell why we're right. And of course, they give him this blank look. And Spock says, well, you're the same species as he is. And he says, no, I'm black on the right side. He's white on the right side. And the look that Spock gives him upon hearing that, and to see Kirk just roll his eyes upon hearing that, you have to remember this was in the late 60s.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And when I saw this, I was roughly 5, 6 years old in Atlanta in the early 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And it made so much sense to me because my friends were both. And I didn't understand why the adults were so upset over skin color.
Mm-hmm.
And so that moment in this episode when I saw two adults, Kirk and Spock, giving that look like, well, why does that matter? That made me feel like I wasn't the weird one to think that it didn't matter. And that's one of the few lessons of the early Star Trek that dealt with social issues that didn't go over my head as a young child. Obviously, most of them were meant for an older audience, but that particular one made me feel like, see, I was right. I was right. It doesn't matter. I knew it didn't matter. I felt it didn't matter. And it doesn't matter. Because Kirk and Spock obviously think that it doesn't matter. And the end of the episode, by the way, they reach the home planet finally after sort of Les Miserables style, the Frank Gorshin character has been chasing the other character off world for so long. They haven't been on their home world in centuries. They both get taken back to their home world and everyone is dead. There's no one left alive of either species.
Oh, wow.
And instead of just letting the whole thing go, they turn on each other and they blame each other for the death of their own species, and they beam down to the planet, and the last thing that you're left with is they're probably just killing each other on that planet, and hence the episode called Let That Be Your Last Battlefield. And watching that again as an adult, it really hit what it must have been like to be an adult watching that in the late 60s as this morality tale played out and said, this is where this leads. This is where this goes.
Right, right.
So for that reason, that is my number one of my original series. My number two is The Trouble with the Tribbles. Because it was just fun. And it, to me, was one of those things that the reboots, the J.J. Abrams reboots, sort of harkened back to of, do you remember when Star Trek had sort of equal parts adventure and fun? This episode was one of those. The jokes pretty much always land, the plotting is effortless, and the end is really satisfying. And the scene where all of the tribbles just sort of pour out on Kirk's head like little puffballs is really funny until you realize that they're all dead. All of those tribbles falling on Kirk's head are dead. So I'm laughing at the expense of hundreds of deceased, totally inoffensive little puffy aliens. They're dead, and I'm having a great time. So, number three, there is an episode called Charlie X.
And yes, that's like the second episode of the whole series, right?
It was early, second early on. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was sort of a like a Twilight Zone. If you remember the Twilight Zone where the little boy could control everything in his town, and sometimes he put the people in television if he didn't like them, and sometimes he would turn them into an animal if he didn't like them, or he would make them have no mouths if he didn't like what they said to him. This was that episode. This boy, this teenage boy, Charlie X, was basically a god, and Kirk had to deal with him. And this teenage boy fell in love with one of the female crew, and she had to deal with that. And in the end, luckily, Deus Machina, there was a race of even more godlike aliens who said, we'll take him in and we'll deal with him because we actually have the power to be able to. But it was, to me, fascinating, a la Spock, fascinating, because it showed how almost impossible of a task it was. And there were those few scenes where the only reason that this boy didn't kill everyone on the ship is because Kirk bluffed his way into being an authority figure in the eyes of this boy.
Right, right.
And only through the steely eyes of James T. Kirk did the boy accept a command. So I filed that away as a kid. And then later when I started to really read some of the Superboy comic books and the Superman comic books, I realized this is what Jonathan Kent went through.
Yeah, yeah.
And so in my mind, I have these two seemingly unrelated storylines combined as a wonderful example of how difficult must that have been, and how did somebody rise to that? So it was incredibly interesting, and it is really worth seeing. Number four, the original Khan episode.
Yeah, actually, I haven't seen that one.
So it's called Space Seed, and I almost hate to spoil it for you if you haven't seen it, but it shows how they found the original Khan and his 72 companions after they were cryogenically frozen and launched into space secretly because the government didn't want to admit that they existed.
They should have learned from Superman 2. That is not how you deal with your villains.
No one learns from Superman 2. But it ultimately ends with Kirk making the decision to leave them on Seta Alpha 5.
Right.
In the Botany Bay ship. And one of the female crew members, a historian who has totally become entranced by Khan, who technically committed treason by helping Khan against the crew of the Enterprise, was given the choice to either face court-martial or go down to the Seta Alpha 5 with Khan. Khan chose to take her as his bride. She chose to go down to the planet with Khan.
Oh, cool.
So in Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, when he blames Kirk for the death of his wife, that's who his wife is. So this episode sets all of that up. And in fact, there's a line at the end of the episode as they're leaving Seta Alpha 5, which really was inhabitable enough, and there was no reason to think that anything bad was going to happen. Kirk says, it would be interesting to come back to this planet in 100 years or so and see what Khan and his people have done with it. And that's the last time in the series that Khan is ever mentioned.
It's like, who came up with the idea to make it into a movie?
Well, obviously someone who saw that and listened to Kirk's last sentiment and said, that would be interesting, wouldn't it? And what if everything went wrong?
Brilliant.
So, number five is, shocker, a Star Trek time travel story.
I didn't see that coming.
No. Because your timeline was erased so that you wouldn't.
Well,
it is called,
at least it's a surprise to me.
It's called City on the Edge of Forever. It was written by Harlan Ellison and it starred Joan Collins.
Oh, wow.
It won so many awards, I won't even talk about them. But in this episode, they go back to the 1920s. Because they're on an alien planet and they have a prisoner and he jumps through this time portal and there's something about this area that makes people crazy. And McCoy also had this serum and he was fighting with a guy and he accidentally injected too much of it into himself and it made him crazy. And so McCoy jumped through the time portal too. So now everyone has no choice but to go through this time portal. So they end up on Earth in the 1920s. And long story short, Joan Collins is supposed to die because she is a sympathizer of the cause that the Nazis in the early days were spouting. And in the early days of Nazism, it didn't sound so bad. In the 1930s, obviously, it was horrible. But in the 1920s, it didn't sound so bad. Had she lived, she was such a sympathetic person that she would have gained a lot of momentum and actually gained a lot of support for the Nazi cause, which would have caused the Nazis to win. And Earth would have been irrevocably changed because the Germans would have taken over.
Wow.
So in the original timeline, she was killed in a car accident. And Kirk, of course, falls in love with her because that's what he does. And even though he knows that she's supposed to die, he has to make that horrible choice in that moment. Do I choose her or do I choose Earth's history and civilization as we know it? And the way that that episode ends is one of the best written original episodes that they ever made.
Yeah, that's cool.
So that's my five.
My five, as I said before, are a little different. I'm not going for a top five, but most memorable. And so I've even kind of titled them, not based on their actual titles, but on how I remembered them as a kid. So I'm going to call my first one Apple Fritter Back Attack.
What?
The episode is actually called Operation Annihilate, where like there's these single cell organisms that live on the on this planet and they fly around and attach on Spock's back. Do you remember that?
Yeah, they look like pancakes.
They look like some kind of ugly omelet or something. But that's why I said apple fritter. I couldn't really think. But as a kid, that just creeped me out that I could just be walking along and something could fly and attach itself to my back.
Yeah, but you would still see the little fishing lines that the crew was using to make them sort of flap to you.
Yeah, it's true. And I watched that. That's the one episode I watched recently, and I realized it's not scary at all. It just looks really silly. The whole episode was really silly. But at the time, it was the scariest thing I'd ever seen. The next episode that was memorable for me was Evil Cloud of Death.
No, not that Evil Cloud of Death.
I believe it was the first Evil Cloud of Death.
That's like saying, I'm so-and-so from the Hamptons. Oh, you mean that Evil Cloud of Death from the Hamptons.
Because it would drain people's energy or something. I don't know, it'd pass through them and they'd die. But it would just like approach them slowly, and it was always the thing of how do we figure out how to stop this unmovable force.
Yeah, that was the one that smelled like honey right before it would get you.
Mm.
Which really scared me as a child because I can't smell.
How am I going to know?
How am I going to know if I'm 300 years in the future on an alien planet and a death cloud is coming to me and everyone goes, oh, it smells like honey, you'll be fine. And I'm like, ugh.
But that's why after the original theme, the most memorable music to me from Star Trek is the dun 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 dun. It's basically Jaws 3000.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like, it's stuck in my head because it fits the mood so well. Okay, so that was the second most memorable episode. Number three, Squishy Dodecahedral Disintegration.
Oh, that the classic.
I don't remember the premise, but I remember they're on some planet where some guy like took a couple of Kirk's crew, a couple of red shirts, of course, and turned them from people into these little those objects. It looked like those toys you play with as a kid where you pull it open and you fit the different shapes inside. It was like that basic size and shape. And he picked one up and he just crumbled it in his hands. And I was thinking, not only is this guy completely helpless as he dies this weird death, but he's oblivious to his death. And that made me afraid to die in my sleep.
Yeah, it did look like he just needed to play Dungeons and Dragons, but he didn't have enough dice.
Exactly.
I think he was descended from the guy who played Yellow Jacket in Ant-Man.
I think you're right. The next one, I won't say much about it. I'll just give you the title. You're Gonna Miss Me When I'm Gorn.
Yes!
That's all I have to say about that.
Also known as Gorn Free.
And lastly, on my most memorable episodes from my childhood, because they scared the crap out of me, Spectre of the Gun, the one where they had to reenact the fight of the OK Corral for trespassing on an alien planet.
Yes.
And Spock had to mind meld with everybody to convince them that what they were seeing wasn't real, because it was like the Matrix, where if you thought it was real, you would actually die.
Right.
And that just spooked me. See, yeah, like I said, all sci-fi has elements of horror in it, and that's what I remember most about the original series.
You're describing these like the way I watched Doctor Who. Which yes. Was from behind the couch with one eye.
Exactly. Yep.
And I'm back there just like cringing going, I love science fiction. I love science fiction.
I really, really do. I do, I do, I do, I do. I love science fiction.
Is it over?
It's Cowardly Lion.
I'm holding my tail. Yes.
But apple fritter back attacks still was the most spookiest of all. I don't think I even saw the actual episode. I think I just saw the commercials for it airing, and I was like, no, no way.
Back it up.
Just back it up.
I love your names. I want you to name everything from now on for all things.
I'll see what I can do.
All right, I feel like I have to live up to this. So for my top five of Star Trek The Next Gen,
All right.
I'm going to introduce some of these with jokes.
All right. Let's do it.
All right. So my number one next gen episode. How many Borg does it take to change a light bulb?
How many?
All of them.
That's awesome.
So my favorite all time Star Trek Next Gen episode is I, Borg.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's a great one.
With Hugh.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that it had that sort of Inception ending, you know, where you're like, did the spinning top actually tilt? When Hugh looked at Geordi, did he actually look at him with individuality? That was just so pitch perfect. And the episode was so well written. And the speech that Guinan gave Picard. And then when she changed her mind, I was thinking, there's no way just because she talks to this alien that she's going to change her mind. But that conversation was done so well, I thought, oh my gosh, that would have changed my mind too.
Yeah.
And then when she tells Picard to go talk to him, and I'm thinking, there's no way. And then the conversation between Picard and Hugh, I thought, oh, I believe it. I really, really believe it. And so it was impeccable from beginning to end. It had everything, except they made such a big deal of Hugh's individuality, of him not being able to say anything but we are Borg and we are this and we are that.
Mm-hmm.
There was a flub in the episode when Crusher and Geordi are standing in front of him and they're talking about how they don't have designations, they have names.
Mm-hmm.
And his name is Geordi and her name is Crusher. Hugh says, do I have a name? And that's when she says, well, Hugh are. And then Geordi goes, Hugh, that's good. That's Hugh. Nobody caught that Hugh said, I.
Oh.
So.
Do you think that was intentional or you think it's a flub?
I think it's a flub. I think it's completely unintentional. And it was just one of those things that skirted under because we're just so used to seeing people talk with individuality. We didn't catch it. But my favorite episode still.
Yeah, I love that one.
So number two, I don't have a joke for it, but it is a combination. It's The Measure of a Man. That's the one where Data had to basically go to court to gain his rights.
Right. Prove that he was sentient, basically.
Right. Yeah. Which, as a fan of Ray Bradbury and Bicentennial Man, or was it Asimov? One of the two. I loved that concept of at what point does something sentient deserve his own rights and his own choices?
At the point where it convinces us it's not going to wipe out the human race.
Yes. So, robot overlords, if you're listening to this, please be aware that in the early 1990s, we were already broadcasting episodes, maintaining your rights.
Keep that in mind.
And my brother, Sancho Panda, is with me on this. So, and if you remember when we were talking an episode or two ago about Jason Bourne and how you can raise the emotional stakes without raising the physical stakes.
Yeah.
This was a great example of raising the emotional stakes.
Yeah.
This is Data fighting for his life of being able to say, I do not wish to be disassembled. And all of it was done with conversations and with points of view. So it raised the emotional stakes to a point of being gripping without ever resorting to physicality.
Or using the holodeck.
Or using the holodeck. And no one attacked the Enterprise.
Yay.
All right, number three.
No clouds were seen this day.
No space clouds.
Uh-huh.
Number three. Here's a joke.
Mm-hmm.
How fast are security officers expected to run?
How fast?
At Worf speed.
Ah, that's awesome.
So, my number three favorite Next Gen episode is Yesterday's Enterprise.
Yeah, that's an amazing one.
Which I just watched today with my wife. And she absolutely loved it. I had to explain a little bit about Tasha Yar.
Mm-hmm.
But once she knew, okay, she died a meaningless death in season one and it was dumb and they just sort of forgot all about her and she didn't get the closure that she deserved. And then to see this episode, she said that was really one of the best ones that she'd ever seen. I loved that it had such a tough battle look, that you really felt that this was a navy, this was a military endeavor in the midst of a war against the Klingons. And I loved it for that. I would watch a series completely based in that alternate reality in a heartbeat.
Yeah, they did such a good job with their attention to detail with the design that you totally bought it.
Yes. And the Enterprise C, that captain, the woman, was still to this day, she's one of my favorite captains.
Even more than Captain Jack Sparrow?
Much more than Captain Jack Sparrow. I think if she faced a giant psychedelic lobster, she would do better. So, number four, why did the Borg cross the road?
I do not know.
To assimilate the chicken.
Resistance is futile.
My number four favorite Next Gen episode is a two-parter, The Best of Both Worlds. That is the Locutus of Borg episode, where Picard becomes a Borg.
Yeah, speaking of raising the stakes.
Raising the stakes, as in season cliffhanger, where Riker orders to kill Picard. So one of the things that I really enjoyed about that episode is when they had the Borg cube ship and the Enterprise battle.
Mm-hmm.
They hid in the cloud, a la Wrath of Khan.
Oh, right.
For the same reason, for the same strategic reason. So that was a nice homage. And I so wanted either Riker or Picard to say, from my studies at Starfleet, I know that this tactic will work. Because you have to know, if you serve on the Enterprise, you've read everything about the Enterprise. It's the flagship. It's the most famous ship in the fleet.
Uh-huh.
So you would know, all of Kirk's maneuvers would be famous.
Every engagement, right.
Every engagement. And so I was in college watching this episode going, come on, just say it, say it, say it, say it.
I don't think I'd made that connection the first time I saw it.
All right, number five. How many Cardassians does it take to change five light bulbs?
How many?
It's irrelevant. There are four lights.
What?
Oh, dude. There is an episode called Chain of Command,
mm-hmm.
where Picard is kidnapped and tortured by the descendants of Kim Kardashian, who are horrible. You thought they were an empire now. Just wait. So the Cardassians kidnap Picard and they torture him. And part of their torture is they show him four lights, but they want him to say that there are five lights.
Oh, okay.
But he won't. And they're asking him all kinds of other questions about the Enterprise and secrets, but interspersed, they keep asking him about these lights because they think if they can get him to break on one thing, they can get him to break on all of the things. Meanwhile, the bad guy from RoboCop has taken over the Enterprise. And the bad guy from Tron is the lead Kardashian, who was also the bad guy from Time Bandits, and he was also Jack the Ripper. He was basically the bad guy from every movie you've ever seen.
But he wasn't typecast.
No. And at the end of the episode, of course, Picard is rescued, and the Cardassian doesn't admit that he's able to be rescued and released. And so he asks Picard one more time, how many lights are there? And Picard says, there are four lights. And the Cardassian has to admit that he never broke Picard, even though he really, really tried. So all that effort was to waste. So in essence, he was hoisted by his own Picard. But at the very end, Picard admits to one of his crewmates that towards the end, he was ready to say that there were five lights.
Oh, so he was getting close.
He was almost there. All right, so that is my top five Star Trek The Next Generation lists. There are many like it, but this one is mine.
Nice. And my list, once again, isn't so much what I think are the best ones, but the ones that are the most memorable. And so it's interesting that you mentioned Tasha Yar's death, because that's at the top of my list. Like the fact
that her actual death?
In the episode where she dies.
Right, like, where she stepped in like the oil from some car lube place and then died.
She tried to step over it and it zapped her. And they take her back to the Enterprise and they're checking her vitals and you're just like, oh, they're gonna... And then all of a sudden, Beverly Crusher's like, she's gone. I was just like, what? Wait, what? She was just trying to get to somebody and she died. It was like the worst game of Red Rover ever played. He was just like, you cannot come over. Zap. It was so meaningless. She might as well have just slipped on a banana peel and broke her neck. I mean, seriously.
She reminds me of the little kids from Bug's Life who put on the play. And Tasha Yar died.
Yeah. So that's why that one was memorable, because as a 9-year-old, I'm like, oh, this is what I get for watching late night shows. Another one, which is surprisingly relevant today, is the one where everyone on the Enterprise gets a virtual gaming addiction.
Which one is that?
It's one where Riker is sleeping with some alien woman at the very beginning of the episode, and she gives him this device that hooks up to your head, and it's like a video game.
Wait, now, was this a real alien woman, or was he just on Holodeck 5 again?
It was a real alien woman.
Okay.
Giving him this gaming device.
All right.
And the thing is, it would activate pleasure sensors whenever you won something, which is basically what Candy Crush does whenever it's... Awesome. Great job. But, you know, basically you're like rewarding you for for every little thing you do. And so people would get addicted to it, but then it also had a mind control feature so that by the end of the episode, the entire Enterprise... was under the control of another race.
Oh, morality tale.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, this was before, you know, Korean parents were leaving their babies so they could go play World of Warcraft at internet cafes.
Or before Pokemon Go made us all leave our homes.
Yeah, what's up with that?
and made us vulnerable to having our things thieved.
I don't know what all the reports are true about it, but I want them all to be true. I want someone to have found a dead body. I want two people to have fallen off a cliff playing Pokemon Go. Is that wrong?
That's terrible.
Okay. Speaking of evil space entities, there's this one episode where a beam of light sneaks its way onto the Enterprise undetected and impregnates Diana Troy. It made me think, like, all you'd have to do to scare people on the Enterprise is run around with a laser pointer. What does that one do? But that was just a really weird episode, and I think they were trying to take a pro-life stance in that episode, because she insisted on having the child and bonding with it, and then it ended up being an alien trying to learn about their race by, you know, incarnated birth.
Sure, going through the whole experience.
Yes. So, that was memorable because it was weird. All right. Number four, there's an episode where Wesley Crusher's science experiment, spoiler alert, goes wrong.
What? Lies.
And he traps his mom inside an alternate universe that's constantly shrinking. And, aka, every teenage boy's fantasy that he could just trap his mom inside an alternate universe. So maybe that's why that one stuck out to me. I wasn't getting along well with our parents at the time.
And they totally plagiarized that from when SpongeBob shrank the entire town.
Exactly.
With Mermaid Man's belt.
And you got it set to M for Minnie when it should be set to W for Wumbo.
And my favorite part was when Plankton comes back and gets off the bus. It would be
we'd
like...
We just turned into a different show that I think somehow is more awesome.
It would be like if Napoleon arrived at Waterloo and it was tiny. And he just rubbed his hands together.
Finally.
Okay, second only to I want to see an entire Star Trek show in the Enterprise C universe. I now want to see Napoleon reaching the tiny Waterloo.
Shrunk by SpongeBob and Patrick stealing Mermaid Man's utility belt. Make that happen, Hollywood?
Why are we not running Hollywood?
And number five favorite episode for me, well, it actually is a favorite of mine because it was interesting at the time, was Moriarty.
Yes.
The one where Geordi LaForge slips up and accidentally says, make a villain capable of defeating Data instead of make a villain capable of defeating Sherlock Holmes. Mm-hmm. So when they start playing their Sherlock Holmes game, they're surprised at how smart he actually is.
Right.
And yeah, that's pretty cool. Clever. Clever writing.
Clever. And why Starfleet itself didn't say, you know, this whole holodeck thing?
So OP. It's so overpowered.
We're going to rip those out of all the ships.
Yes. I don't care if you want your spa here.
Although, interesting trivia, the only person who ever played himself on the holodeck is Stephen Hawking.
Oh, that's right. That is cool. Well, that makes me want to talk about the movies, because there's an awesome holodeck scene where, if you were ever wanted to see Picard wasting Borg with a Tommy gun. Say hello to my little friend. Awesome.
Oh, the movies. Oh, so much good stuff. So much good stuff in the movies. So, you know, clearly, you know what my favorite Star Trek movie of all time is.
It would definitely have to be Star Trek V.
Incorrect.
The one where they blow up God with a bird of prey. No?
No. The all-time best Star Trek movie ever made of all time, without question, Galaxy Quest.
Oh, I'm so on board with you on this one. That really was their best one. You were absolutely right. Rest in peace, Alan Rickman.
Rest in peace. By Grap Thor's hammer. By grabbing Thor's hammer. By...
It wasn't just Vision who could pick it up. Alan Rickman could, too.
By gripping Thanos' hammer. You will be avenged. I'm pretty sure that's right.
I think so.
Oh, there was so much. There was so much to love about Galaxy Quest. When Sigourney Weaver asks Tim Allen, does the rolling help? And he stands up and goes, yes.
Oh. The fact that they had a guts to make an alien species that wasn't humanoid, but was just this like blancmange blob thing.
Yeah.
That was so good. The teleporter, like, transporting the pig inside out.
Yeah. And the scene where they get into the corridor they have to go through, that's just a series of chomping, clamping, metal, stomping things.
You're like, why is this here?
And Sigourney Weaver just goes, well, F that! And she's like, who wrote this episode? Galaxy Quest, oh... Impeccable. If we do an episode, which I intend to do, of Five Panda Theater, this is on the list. All right, actual Star Trek films. Let me introduce this with a joke.
Okay.
Why do 1990s genetic super people try to take over the world?
Why is that?
Because they con.
Nice. I was trying to sneak Pinky in the Brain in there somehow, but I couldn't get it to work.
And I knew you would, and I love you for it. Yes. Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, all-time best Star Trek film. AKA, welcome to not Fantasy Island.
He's not even, doesn't even seem like the same person. He's so towering and imposing.
Oh, he was so good. I saw an interview with him, and he said the thing which is true, that villains don't think that they're villains. They think that they're justified.
Mm-hmm.
And he had an entire, this is on the extra features of the Wrath of Khan collector's edition, by the way, but his interview about how he approached Khan, to me, was one of the most inspiring things that any aspiring writer could hear.
Mm-hmm.
So I highly recommend listening to that. But... this script was directed by someone who had never filmed a Star Trek film before. It was written by someone who had never written a Star Trek film before. It was produced by someone who had never produced a Star Trek film before. We're so used to Harve Bennett producing Star Trek films, but we don't know that this was his first one.
Oh, wow.
And so that, I think, that fresh take and the fact that everything was so literary, it clearly had the Moby Dick, you know, Henry Melville references, but it also had Charles Dickens from A Tale of Two Cities. The book that Kirk was given, where he began the movie by saying it was the best of times or worst of times, and then he ended the film by reading, "It's a far, far greater thing that I've ever done. It's a far, far greater place that I go," after Spock had died. It was bookended by Charles Dickens.
Wow. So the Batman series wasn't the first to do that.
Not at all. No. And don't forget, this is the one that gave us the famous scene where Kirby and Yoshi were marooned. So is that your number one as well?
Yeah. I'd have to say that I'd tie it with number six, just because I love number six so much when I saw it in the theaters. The Undiscovered Country.
That's on my list too. So number two, Star Trek IV, The Whales.
The Whales.
With, shocker, time travel.
Yes.
It had that Trouble with the Tribbles, that great mix of humor and adventure that I love so much. And it was one of the first times that they really leaned towards the humor, because they had just been through the death of Spock. They had been through the search for Spock and everything. They just battled the Klingons, and it just seemed so heavy that it was very refreshing to see the humor. When they land the ship in the park and they cloak it and they walk away, and Kirk says, "Okay, everybody remember where he parked."
I was going to say, like, whoever thought that we would all want to see Spock mind melding with a whale and discovering it's pregnant.
Yeah. All right. Number three. Here's a joke. Do you know why you've never seen a Romulan frog?
No, why is that?
They have croaking technology.
That's bad, man.
So, my number three favorite Star Trek movie of all times is Abrams 1. The first reboot from 2009.
Ah, okay, I gotcha.
And, oh look, time travel.
Oh, hey, I'm curious. When you were talking about the episode with people being black on one side and white on another, you're basically talking about how well Star Trek A deals with social injustice and B envisions a future where we've overcome it.
Yes.
I thought it was really interesting if you think about the time of when the new Star Treks came out and the type of tensions our world was experiencing at that time, the fact that they chose a Middle Eastern man to be the captain of the Enterprise, I was like, as soon as I saw it, I was like, well done, keeping the spirit.
Except for the fact that that was the same Middle Eastern guy who wanted to kill Tony Stark.
Well, you can't win them all.
You know, actors gotta work.
Yeah, exactly.
So, my number four all-time favorite Star Trek movie of all time is Abrams 2.
Wow, you see, a lot of people throw a lot of hate at that movie.
And I knew that you were going to bring this up. I don't understand the hate.
So most of the hate comes from the fact that when interviewed during a Comic-Con or some kind of convention, they asked Abrams, "Is Benedict Cumberbatch Khan?" And he said no. So he flat out lied to them, and everybody knew it was Khan, and then it was Khan. So, well, people were geared up to dislike it.
Well, that's Trekkies for you. And I know that in saying that, I've just enraged the entire Trekkie community.
Thanks for listening to our show. Thanks for giving us a shot.
I can feel your hate rising within you.
And rubbing salt in the wound. Now we're just quoting Star Wars at them.
It's as if millions of voices suddenly cried out in terror.
And downvoted us. Gave us one-star ratings.
So, not to say all Star Trek movies are dependent on time travel, but you have to admit, in this film where Benedict Khan is back.
Cumberbatch.
Benedict Khan is back. The chips are down, so what does Spock do? Oh, that's right. I have an alternate timeline older Spock.
Yeah, that's so cool.
Would you like to phone a friend?
That's exactly what he does. He just Skypes him.
He just Skypes him.
Could we? I just need some FaceTime with my older self.
Let me Google myself. How to defeat Khan. But it really makes me wonder, out of all the episodes and all the films, how good would Kirk have been without time travel?
He'd be dead.
I have a plan. No, sir, we can't slingshot around the sun. I don't have a plan.
Let's fly into this thing then and see if that works. It worked for my dad. Too soon?
Okay, number five, all-time favorite Star Trek film.
I'm interested to see where you go with this one, because now you're dealing with the ones that people don't love as much.
No, I'm not, because I'm still on even numbers.
Oh, you haven't run out of even numbers yet.
No.
Drat.
Ah, the old even number Star Trek trick. Star Trek 6.
Yay.
We haven't totally plagiarized Shakespeare yet.
Is that the one with the Romulans and the Capulets? Tale of Two Houses?
No, but that's a really good joke.
Thanks. I was upset I didn't use it last time, so I was hoping I'd get a chance.
Well, you know. When in Romulus.
Yes.
So, I thought Star Trek VI was what you were saying earlier. At the time it came out, Russia was undergoing severe economic crumbling.
Mm-hmm.
So to see the Klingons have their moon explode and to have their society crippled and to have a once strong, militaristic, proud culture now be vulnerable and now forced to be open to joining a larger, more peaceful methodology was exactly in tune with the end of the Cold War.
Yeah.
And in the 80s, when this came out, it could not have been more relevant, which was so Gene Roddenberry.
Yes, agreed.
It was slightly heavy-handed, a little bit, but it was trying to be elevated, and it was trying much more than almost any other film of that time. So I give it high marks for shooting that high. And I love that Spock even made the joke trying to convince Kirk to be the ambassador to talk to the Klingons, when of course Kirk is still upset that they killed his son.
Mm-hmm.
And Kirk was like, well, why me? Why are they sending me? And Spock says, well, you know, there's the ancient Vulcan proverb, only Nixon can go to China. And I thought, that is funny to three people, and I'm one of them.
Yeah. I was younger, so it didn't feel that heavy-handed to me, probably for that reason. But then also the fact that there were people on both sides who were part of the conspiracy to keep the war going, and the one on our side, or on the good side, was a logical Vulcan. Like, mm-hmm. That was a really, really cool twist.
Well, you know, she was the slutty one from Sex and the City, so what do you expect?
Yeah.
But I did like that it was also a somewhat murder mystery.
Yeah, that was my favorite part of it, actually, was what was going on the ship itself as they were trying to figure out who did these two suits belong to, and yeah, mm-hmm. That was cool.
You know, the slight bloodstains on the magnetic boots and all of the clues that were pieced together, it really kept you captivated on two levels.
So it was Star Trek CSI.
Yes! Yes, it was.
And I think they could have even gone more in-depth in that part, and I would have enjoyed it, but it was still good. As a kid, I loved when when Kirk kicked that alien in the knees, and that's where his genitalia were.
Yes!
And his face, like, turned, like, all these different shades of colors. Like, right. As a kid, that just cracked me up.
See, he knew to kick him in the knees of the one.
So, I'm totally on board with your list. I don't think there's almost no changes I would make to it.
And what's interesting is I think we flipped from the Kirk Spock movies, the even-numbered ones are good, and in the reboots, it's the odds.
It's possible, yeah, because it looks like Khan wasn't as well accepted, but it looks like 1 and 3 are going to be really good.
And I'm, I suppose, in the minority, but I did not dislike the Khan reboot. I really didn't. I enjoyed it. However, the early reviews of Beyond have been so good. And the thing that I appreciate the most in what I've read, and I've been careful not to spoil anything, is I've seen more than once that it captures the original spirit of what Roddenberry set out to do.
Yeah, I think I read some reviews talking about it feels like a 2-long-hour episode of an away mission.
Which is great, yeah. Because if this is their 5-year mission, and if this is one of their away missions, then yes, that's what we loved.
Yeah, and it's what we haven't seen, and it's part of what the fans of the original series were saying was missing from the new one so far.
Mm-hmm. So in this new film, they're 3 years in to the 5-year mission.
Oh, okay.
So they're somewhat experienced in doing this, and Kirk himself is older by just a little bit than his father was when he died.
Oh, wow.
And emotionally, that's something that Kirk can't shake, that he has now surpassed the life of his father. And so he's having a introspective, I guess, era in his own life of what does this mean? What does this mean for who I am and for what I'm trying to accomplish and for what I'm yet to accomplish? Up until now, I've been trying to live up to my father, but now I've passed the point of what he achieved. I'm truly in my own uncharted territory. So as a character arc, I'm very interested to see what that means for this Kirk.
Yeah, it'd be nice to see a development of his character further than just, I'm learning how to lead and I'm not that good at it yet.
Right. And the script, again, from everything that I've heard, is very, very good. And you know, Simon Pegg helped write the script.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So Simon, longtime Star Trek fan, he loves the characters and it comes across. And he loves fun, obviously, and that comes across. So I think it's possibly going to be that perfect mix, that Star Trek IV comedy, that Trouble with the Tribbles, that perfect balance that we love. And there is a precedent for talented Scotties, by the way.
What's this?
James Doohan, the original Scotty,
mm-hmm.
invented the Klingon language.
Oh, wow.
He came up with the grammar and the vocabulary. So to see Simon Pegg now create what, by all accounts, is a really good script, go Scotties.
Yay!
Yay, red shirts!
The ones that don't die.
Yeah. So, the new film, what is the plot? I had to look it up because, as we talked about, the trailers are being very good about not ruining it.
Yeah, I agree.
So here's what's going on. The Enterprise is attacked by the blind guy from Thor, who's mad because he didn't get to be James Bond. So he attacks the Enterprise with thousands of little skinny things. So, sorted. Actually, boarded.
Boarded, nice.
So he's mad at the Federation. And to me, it's interesting that so many people are mad at the Federation, because it's odd to me that in these films, it's the Federation that's the good guys.
Mm-hmm.
Because usually the big empire are the bad guys.
Yeah.
So you've got the Empire from Star Wars. You've got the Alliance. You've got the Alliance from Firefly and Serenity. Usually it's the ones that control everything that are the bad guys. But in this case, the Federation is the good guys.
Mm-hmm.
Except that every movie we encounter someone who thinks that the Federation is the bad guys.
Because it's all about your perspective.
Exactly. So it really makes me wonder, could there have been a mirror view of Firefly where one of the Alliance ships was like the Alliance's Enterprise, and that ship had all of the lovable characters that you root for against these aliens that keep trying to destroy the unifying thing that the Alliance is trying to do? So instead of Star Trek Beyonce, it would be Manifest Destiny's Child.
Nice.
But you're right. It is the perspective. So all of these stories are being told as if the Federation is the good thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
So every rebellion, we're the Vaders. We're the Tarkins in this scenario. We believe that we are still the unifying force. We're the Alexander the Greats. We're the Julius Caesars that just want to unify everything for what in our minds is for peace.
Mm-hmm.
But is it? So it's a very interesting, I think, way to look at things. So what is the new villain mad about? I don't know. That he's a biped with a weird head? Well, welcome to Star Trek. You're not special, dude. You're not the first. Join the club. But it should be filled with heart and humor. It should be good.
I'm looking forward to it.
So I'm seeing it Saturday.
Okay.
And by the way, I am seeing it with someone who literally served on the USS Enterprise.
That's bragging rights right there.
His name is Chad Graham. He served in the Navy, and while he served, he was assigned to the carrier USS Enterprise.
Wow.
Now, he had to get in Spock's face to get assigned.
Don't we all?
And I'm not saying they had a relationship. I didn't ask. He didn't tell. But he served, and we're going on Saturday.
Yay. So, is that it for our show for today?
That is it for our show.
And what are we doing next week?
Well, next week we're going to see the movie.
Oh, right. Of course.
Well, I mean, we're going to see it. We're not going to see it together.
Aw.
No, you have to see it in a different theater. It's like the president and vice president. We can't both be in the same theater.
Because if something dies, happened, the podcast has to go on.
Right, yeah. We have to think about, you know, the greater good. So, yes. So next week we'll review the film, and also I'll have some things to say about character arcs and Kirk and Spock and all of the characters and how they've grown through the three movies.
Yeah, I think that'll be good, because I kind of feel like their growth in the second one was too similar to their growth arcs in the first one. So I'd like to see the third one go beyond those. Star Trek Beyond those. Yeah.
So, thanks everyone for listening to our words.
Yeah. So, do you have a battle cry?
Let's think. How about from Hell's Heart, I stab at thee?
That's a great way to end the show. I was sure you were going to say never give up, never surrender.
Oh, that's so much better.
So never give up, I stab at thee. Let's just combine them. And have a great week, guys. See ya.
See ya. Also, I kept trying to write my own jokes because there's a reason. I wanted to introduce some of my top five list with Star Trek jokes, and there weren't enough actual jokes, so I tried to make my own. Mm-hmm. And there was one I really struggled with, and I think it was too long, so I just sort of abandoned it. But it was, did you know that in an alternate reality, Khan and Spock decided to make prosthetic limbs for military personnel injured in battle, so they made these prosthetic knees. And Khan's knees were metal, and Spock's knees were made of a space polymer. So Khan tried to load his ship up with as many metal knees as Spock loaded with his space polymer knees. And Khan's ship sank. Do you know why?
Why?
He didn't understand that the knees of the few outweighed the knees of the many.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, that took a little... a little long to develop.
So, I went to Nicholas Meyer for the rewrite on that one. And I haven't heard back from him, so I may just have to cut the whole joke.
You think he has anything better to do?
Well, apparently so.
Tweak my jokes, please.
So, so you think you can joke.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Maybe it'll make the outtakes. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see.
Oh, I know what that means.